Welcome. I'm Dr. Barry Holzer.
And I'm Hani Holzer.
Thank you for tuning in to Parent is a Verb. Our topic today is Kavod and Yira of Parents, or what people talk about, Kibud Avaim. This is, you might say, an interesting topic for parents to talk about, and exactly how does this fit into parenting? Well, I think it's really an important, almost essential part of what we do as parents is really how we parent and how we teach these concept of kavod and yira. And so I guess the first question is, what do they really mean? What is kavod and what is yira? And I think people often misunderstand them because, you know, as the Gemara and the Rambam talk about, that kavod really talks about sort of honor and care for a parent. So, for example, the Rambam Hilchas Mamrim talks about, the Maimonides says that what is kavod, what is honor, to feed and give to drink and dress give shelter for your parent from their money. It's not a financial responsibility. It's really a personal responsibility. And if the parent doesn't have, then, and the child does, then you have to, then the child has a responsibility to help out. But the primary responsibility is just to be able to take him out for a walk, to take care of him, to you know, be sort of his personal shamash if need be, and to make sure that he's taken care of, and to treat him with the respect that you would treat a teacher that you respected, or a rabbi that you respected, and that even when you talk about him or quote something from him, you quote it, refer to him as Abba Mari, as my father, my teacher, you know, refer to him in respectful ways. Whereas Mora, very people think I can get this wrong. Mora is defined often as fear, and, you know, Yira in Hebrew can mean two things. It can be fear and can mean reverence. And Mora, when we talk about Mora with a father, and even with talk about God, we're generally talking about the reverence, not to stand in his place, not to sit in his place, not to contradict.
I think what you're talking about in terms of the reverence, you know, in our culture is probably a very important topic to discuss, because if anything, since the 1960s, for sure, we've developed an American culture that's great at irreverence. So it's very, for us who kind of grew up with parents who were able to impart to us what reverence was, I think it's very hard to impart that, much more challenging to impart that to our children today, because the culture has been so irreverent.
Right. I think you're right. Even if you look at the media, we grew up with Father Knows Best.
Right.
My three sons.
Could you imagine a show today that anyone would tune into that says Father Knows Best? It's a joke.
Since the 60s, we talk about, you know, like anybody over 30 can't be trusted.
Right.
Of course, that's the age has expanded as the decades have gone on. But the concept of parents being
revered,
respected, and given a different type of relationship than anybody else is really not understood.
Well, I think also, especially because over the past number of decades, in the common culture, parents have become much more pals of their children as opposed to parents of their children. Even if they are parenting their children, there's still this very common feeling of we're just all pals in this together.
Right. There's a great sense of collegiality. It's one thing for a child to feel that my parent is my best friend. It's another thing for a child to feel that I can treat my parent just like my friend.
Correct. Well, that's an incredible distinction. Absolutely.
Right. And it is the Torah approach is so antithetical to our modern culture that it's really hard to wrap our minds around sometimes. Again, going back to the Rambam, just quoting from the Talmud, he says, he introduces that Kavod Avaim is a great mitzvah, as is Mora Avaim, so the honor and the reverence for parents. And God equated them with his kavod and his reverence. And he brings the psukim to show the equation. We literally learn halachos out of this equation. And that just like he's asked us to revere him, he asked us to revere and to give honor to our parents. Now, this concept is I think, in our society, one that people have a hard time dealing with.
It's almost intangible, because even if you think about, you know, kings and queens who were revered, with the way the media has portrayed kings and queens and anyone in positions of honor, and so many of the world leaders really have disearned, I don't know if that's a word, our honor and our respect, it's very hard to have models of what respect and reverence are. Very hard. Right. It's almost intangible, as opposed to when we grew up, it was tangible.
I mean, it used to be that even if a president did something that might be considered inappropriate, the media would just ignore it and not report it. Now, it's, you know, the media is mostly about lampooning or pointing up anything that's any celebrity or anyone in power does wrong, or that any way they can put them down.
I remember as a kid when Gerry Ford was president, he was a person who tripped all the time. He was a real klutz. And I remember at the time being little and thinking, why do they keep showing that on television? I mean, it's embarrassing. Why are they trying to embarrass the president?
Can't walk and chew gum at the same time.
But that was, for me, that was like a very big demarcation in where we were going, with respect and reverence for people who were of higher positions.
I don't think that happened to Roosevelt or Truman.
As a matter of fact, in Roosevelt's case, I remember reading that they didn't talk about his disabilities. They covered his disabilities.
Correct. So that there's been a real change in our society. So how do we transmit this Torah concept where it doesn't exist in our culture and in our media? And how do you instill in your kids and make yourself feel comfortable with it? Especially, I think, for a lot of people who grew up respecting, with a lot of respect in the house, but respect often meant fear as well.
Okay? Right.
And so if there was an angry parent and they hated that, they're much more comfortable with the idea of being warm and collegial and, you know, and not really insisting upon this respect, because to them, it was never very comfortable. It really wasn't good.
Well, I think also, you know, besides the fact that it's a mitzvah from the Torah, you know, why is respect and reverence so important in a parent-child relationship? And you know, in thinking about it, and I'm not sure what you think, but in my own thinking of it, is that it's a boundary. It sets up a very important boundary. And boundaries are very important in relationships, especially parent-child relationships. And when they're set up from the beginning, they can be created and recreated throughout the life cycle so that they're always appropriate.
Well, I think that, you know, it's interesting because those of us who study family therapy, Salvador Mnuchin, it turns out they've grown up in a very traditional Jewish home. He started a whole field of family therapy, I think he published back in the 1970s, called structural family therapy. And his belief system, his whole theory, is based on the fact that problems in families and families that are really falling apart and that are dysfunctional, that don't work well, are boundary issues. Either the boundaries are too loose and there's what we call enmeshment, and I think that's where people understand that people are overly involved with one another, okay, and can't seem to separate themselves out as individuals, or there's a real disconnect, that people are too distant from one another. And what he tries to do in his therapy is fascinating. It's not easy to do or learn, is recognize these problems in the boundaries and really almost set it up and create the boundaries in the therapy. So he'll put the parents on one side and the kids on the other side. And, you know, if kid tries to, he's saying something that seems inappropriate, he'll literally pick himself up and make himself the boundary. But the whole idea that these boundaries are really very important is part of the family.
So families function well. I mean, just again, aside from the fact that it's a mitzvah, it's one of the 613 mitzvahs, it's very important to have these boundaries so that families function well. People know where they're at.
Right. So that's certainly, it's important to have a certain amount of flexibility within the boundaries. I'm not advocating that your whole relationship with your child should be about just respect me. Okay? You want to have fun with your kids. You want to do nice things together. But you don't want to forget, there's also, this isn't, you know, just an, I'm not just another buddy. you have to remember that there's a balance here.
Right. Well, I think the upside of our generation, since we were very clear about the downside of our generation, I think the upside is that parents can feel very emotionally closely connected to their children and want to be, you know, playful with them and want to be involved with them in ways that the previous generation weren't necessarily adept at or familiar with doing with their children.
Right. And I agree. I think that we're very good at really fulfilling sort of our responsibilities to our kids in terms of not just the physical needs of our kids, but the emotional needs as well, and really developing the relationship with them so they can really learn to be in relationship from us. And how you developing a relationship with your kids really teaches them how to relate to others. And I think that's essential. But providing a sense of boundaries, when parents say no, right, the ability to set a limit gives children a greater sense of security.
Right.
And very often, you know, I remember cases of teenagers where they just keep pushing and pushing and they put on tantrums and how come I can't stay out later and I can't do this. And when parents just keep giving in, the kid just keeps asking for more. And when you talk to the kid, it becomes pretty clear what they're waiting for is their parent to finally set the limit so that they'll feel like somebody else is really in control and really in charge.
Yes, I think that's so true. It's very frightening for children to feel like the power in the relationship has been abdicated to them and that they get to make the decision. That is very frightening.
And so part of gaining the respect is really being in charge. And I think that, you know, when we connect this, you know, that's part of our being able to function in this world is accepting the fact that God's in charge. Or as a friend of mine likes to say always,
the Lord is in charge.
And that's a key tenet in our belief. And that with the young children especially, when parents sets limits and makes the rules and so forth, and they learn somebody else is in charge, it gives them a sense of security. And if they can grow up and start accepting and recognizing that God is in charge, it gives us a greater sense of security as well. You know, so I think these are really crucial issues that we need to be able to teach. And the question is, how do you teach respect then?
Yeah, I think it's an excellent question precisely because there are very few models for it today. And, you know, again, in thinking about it, like the first thing that comes to mind after having given it great thought is that respect between spouses is a great place for this to start being modeled. If you can show respect for your spouse, for example, by not putting each other down, by, you know, being respectful toward each other, by not contradicting each other, especially in front of the kids. Look, if you have to contradict each other, you know, when you're alone in the car, fine. But when you're with your children, when you're in their presence, to not contradict each other, to have those polite niceties between the two of you where it's, you know, thank you, I really appreciate that, or, you know, that was so helpful, thank you. Yes, please, I really could use that, thank you. Those things start engendering an atmosphere of respect / ultimately reverence.
Right. I think these are key parts of relationships in general. I think if I remember correctly, John Gottman, when he talks about the four key elements that predict marriages doing well, two of them that stick out of mind is, you know, show respect and a lack of contempt.
Right.
And so that if you really, you know, put down your partner, okay?
I would call that the character assassination program.
Right. You know, it's really, it destroys the relationship, and it's evidence that the relationship is not going to survive.
Right.
So therefore, that respect is really key and important. And just showing respect for each other, okay? And it's really okay, really, to remind your kids, you know, no, that's Abba's place, that's Daddy's place, you can't sit there.
Well, I really like when our kids ask if they can sit in my chair or they can sit in your chair. You know, and sometimes it's okay for me to say, yeah, sure, sit in my chair, it's fine. But that they know to ask that question and that they know there is that boundary and there's a separation is important.
Right. It seems like a little thing, but it has great meaning to it. Because it's so lacking in our society. I think we have to work much harder at it to make this very real.
The next level of modeling this respect and this reverence that we're talking about today is really when the grandparents are present, when they come to visit, or when the you go visit them as a family. And how do you interact with your parents? How do you show them respect and them reverence?
And not everybody has a great relationship with their parents. You know, as adults, it's sometimes the relationship with parents can be somewhat strained. But it is still very important that you show the proper respect to your parents and to your in-laws. You know, and sometimes people don't always get along with their in-laws.
Right. And it is hard to respect some people. It's harder it really is more challenging, even if they are your parents or your in-laws, to really innately, naturally respect them, because they don't always seem to necessarily engender those feelings or those actions.
And to the extent, the Rambam, again, says, how far does kibbutz of aim go? Right? And he talks about, even if they took, you know, a bag of your gold coins and threw them into the ocean, you can't embarrass them and you can't cause them pain and you can't get angry at them. Or even if you're up on the dais being honored and your father or mother comes and rips your clothes and spits in your face, you can't embarrass them. You have to be quiet and show reverence and be afraid of Melech Malchei Melachim Shetziva B'kach, of God who commanded you in this, right? Because if a king came and did it to you, right, you wouldn't be able to sue anything either. So that it goes to that extent that it's almost hard for us to imagine the distance we have to go in terms of showing respect. So yes, even if your parents and your in-laws have been impossible or demanding or really difficult to deal with,
or neglectful,
right, your responsibility to show respect has nothing to do with their being appropriate in their behavior.
Right. The respect doesn't require you or engender you to be anybody's best friend.
You've got to show respect even if you don't like them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And being cut off and not, you know, visiting at all is also not, you know, is generally also, except for, I mean, certainly there are limits based on specific situations, but you'd really have to ask a shayla, you'd have to ask a rabbi, if you really feel like you can't talk to a parent or you can't visit them at all, you might need to limit it.
I agree, those are very, very important, critical times to be able to approach a rabbi and to ask the rabbi what to do and how to do it, and not to take that upon yourself, because ultimately, remember, what you're really trying to do is you're modeling for your children what reverence and what respect are. And it's also, you know, between you and the good Lord, like at the end of the day.
I actually heard a fascinating insight from Rabbi David Foreman on this that I think was very helpful in really putting, you know, helping us accept this. Because if you look in the Ten Commandments in the Aseret Dibros, we know they were given on two tablets, right? The first one seems to be all about between us and God, and the second one is between man and man. You know, the second one is don't kill, don't commit adultery, you know, all those nice things we shouldn't be doing. There's one problem, though, and that's that the last one of the first tablets, the fifth one, is honor your father and your mother. But that's between man and man. That's not between man and God. What's it doing on the first tablet along with, I am the Lord your God, there should be no other gods before me, you know, don't swear, you know, swear my name in vain, keep the Shabbos. Those are between us and God. What is the honor your mother and your father doing on this? It's clearly then the first tablets aren't between us and God. So what is this division? Because the second tablets clearly are between man and man. And so he explained that the first tablets are between man and his creators. God is clearly the number one creator in this universe.
He gets the first four slots.
But the last slot was specifically saved for parents, because when it comes to us, our parents are also our creators. And even though, as the Talmud says, if your parent tells you to contradict something in the Torah, you don't, because you and your parents are all required to honor God. But parents are not in the same categories just between man and man, between any other relationship. Parents are in category to themselves as being on that side of creators. It's a different type of relationship. It's a, what we call a paradigm shift. It's a whole different way of thinking about the relationship. So that when we think about relationship between us and parents, this is really modeled after our relationship with God. This is not modeled after our relationship with other people. And that's the primary model that we use. And as the Torah often does, is that, you know, parents are modeled after the relationship with God. And of course, the relationship with God reciprocally is modeled after our relationship with our parents. And that's sort of the practice mode of how we learn this concept of honor and reverence for God as well. But I think this sort of a whole different way of thinking as parents, not just as other people, as we do in our society, but really that they're our creators. And as creators, we have a debt to them that, you know, we have a way of looking at them and treating them that is totally different than the way we might look or treat anybody else in this world.
And I think, again, you know, if you don't have models in your own life, then I would say look for models of people who know how to impart and treat their parents with reverence. They're not that hard to find.
Right, but I think those of us who've been in yeshivas or seminaries, you know, there have certainly been rabbis who really everybody respects and looks up to and treats with a certain amount of reverence. And so this concept of, you know, of reverence exists, I think, and that's part of Jewish society. So we need to use this concept of reverence, this concept of giving honor to people who deserve respect, and recognize that our parents biologically, by nature, get this respect because they're parents.
I think what we've been talking about pretty in depth is how to give that reverence or respect or to have that for our parents, but how do we engender that, again, in our children? You know, because they're the generation that really grew up in a completely irreverent society, you know, United States 2008.
So I think talking to our kids about this in this way, I think we've talked about ways to model it between parents, to model it between the parent and the grandparents, and to really model for our children how you treat your parents, to talk about their kids before they go to the grandparents, how they need to treat them.
I think sometimes things can be scripted for educational purposes, and scripted well, scripted sincerely.
Because especially when your parents get older, and they're going to elderly grandparents who sometimes might have short-term memory loss, who might have physical infirmity, and the idea of just being there to help them, being there to walk them, to walk with them, let them hold on to them, being there to, you know, sometimes, you know, it's a family simcha or a wedding, a bar mitzvah or something, and you say, why don't you sit with Zadie for the next half hour, and then, you know, your brother or sister will take over, and spending time with them, it's really the idea that, yeah, that they might not be fun to spend time with now, but we spend time with them because they're our parents, they're our grandparents.
Right. I think, you know, walking grandma home, you know, even though it's late at night and grandma wants to go home and she's going to go home, that's important. You know, we walk grandma home. Yes, that's what we do.
Right. I think the other aspect of our society is that when you go back a few generations, people really lived very close to extended family. So people would see their grandparents very frequently. Today, that's not true for everybody. For many people, they might live hundreds of thousands of miles away, mm-hmm. or even if they live 15 or 20 miles away, the nature of their lives is that they may not see their grandparents very often at all. So it's very important that, A, we make the time to visit, and B, that we really prepare the visits and model this, okay, and that we talk about it. But you also have to talk about the respect, and it's, I think,
so you're talking about making the opportunities happen.
Yes, you have to create the opportunities. But I think even at home, it's important. It's very often, I think, might be uncomfortable for a parent to stand up for their own respect. It's easier for the spouse In other words, for a husband to stand up for, don't talk to your, that you can't talk to your mother that way, or you know, mom to say you can't sit in dad's seat,
or for the parent to say to the child, you know, I think you've forgotten that I'm not your friend. I'm your parent, and you can't, you need not talk to me that way. How could you say it differently?
Right. So I think these are all issues that we have to really be cognizant of, because this doesn't come naturally in our society, and it therefore the culture teaches on a constant basis something that's against what we really want our kids to learn.
If we look at this, at the common culture, if we look at the media, if we look at the television shows that are out there, I don't watch those things very often, but I think parents are really pretty much put in the buffoon role more often than not.
Yes.
You know, that was never the case when we were growing up. It was, again, it goes back to father knows best. It was never that dad was the butt of every joke.
Right. And today, you know, it's making fun of parents, or in the media throughout, just making fun of anybody who might deserve respect.
Right.
And so I think our ability to model this, to teach this, to be aware of this, I think that's really the key. I think once we're aware, we can do a pretty good job with it. And if we're having such difficulty with our own parents, something that's something that's needs to be addressed, that needs to be talked about, needs to be dealt with. But overall, I think we can, if we're aware and we use this paradigm, we use this approach and recognize that our parents are really our creators, and therefore God commands us to show them this honor, this respect, this reverence. We keep that in mind. I think it's not so hard to really teach these concepts to our kids. Thank you for tuning into Parent is a Verb on OUradio.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email them to parentisaverb@ou.org. Thank you and have a good day.